Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Well, hi, everybody. It's me, Chaka Khan. I feel for you. I think I love you. It's Rosie O'Donnell Duck, just back from over the pond. Is that what they say? Across the pond? What do they say? I went to London to see opening night of the Madonna tour, and it did not disappoint. It was really an unbelievable night, and she's magical. I don't know what to say. What she's able to do, and 4 decades of entertainment and music, hit after hit after hit. Her amazing children, the beautiful video pieces edited together about people dying of AIDS, and the beautiful thing about her mother and David, her son's mother, and Esther, her little daughter, dancing, her daughter, Mercy, playing the piano like a virtuoso. Lola was there doing the Vogue bit. It's an amazing, amazing tour, and you'll see it and you'll know. The fact that she's able to do what she does at 65 is astounding. And I will adore her forever. There you go. I saw a wonderful musical in London called Little Big Things. And it's about a young family, a family of 4 boys in London. And one of the boys gets injured in a diving accident, one of the brothers. And what it does to the family and how he finds himself again. And it's very touching and very well done. And the performers were epically talented. Like, everyone had a more gorgeous voice than the next. And together, their harmonies were uplifting. It was wonderful to see that show in the midst of such horrifying news in the Mideast. And it doesn't seem to be getting better. There's misinformation and hate coming everywhere, and people trying to present their feelings. And I don't know. Maybe not everyone needs to have a knee-jerk reaction, you know, on social media. I don't even know. Listen, we have a wonderful show today. Excellent and fascinating show with Angela Tucker, who's a very talented young woman. She is an adoption expert. Her new book, You Should Be Grateful, is out now, and it is a wonderful read, and it's full of very insightful things. It's a great book. It's a great conversation. And she's an amazingly gifted woman. She did a documentary years ago that I loved, and we ended up talking about, and I think she was on the radio show. I'm not exactly sure, but I know that I've spoken to her before, and I found her quite enchanting. And here we are, Angela Tucker. Take a listen. Hey, Angela Tucker, welcome here. Welcome to Onward with Rosie O'Donnell.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Good to hear of your success and what's happened in your life in the time since closure.
Thank you.
Tell everyone a little bit about your family.
Yeah.
Tell them about your situation.
The situation. Well,
because the family is complicated, right? You were adopted by a white family. And tell everybody about your journey in that area.
Well, everybody has unique families, right? But yeah, I was born in Tennessee, placed in foster care right out of the hospital, basically, and then was adopted across the country to Washington State. My parents, who are white and I'm black, they adopted a bunch of kids all from foster care, and they're really great folks and had a great upbringing, but in a closed adoption was just very frustrated that I couldn't know who I was related to, where I came from, why I had to be adopted, all these questions. And my parents would do the best they could with me to wonder as well. You know, they were just like, where did you get your athleticism? And who in your family has a sweet tooth like you? Like that. But that was as much as we could do until I was 21. And I...
Now, would you say the conversation your whole childhood had been that open with your parents, where they were inclusive of your birth family from the get-go in conversations and casual conversation like that?
Yeah, I think so. They didn't know much, and so they couldn't give me details, but that alone was really comforting, that they would really... They had this attitude of like, we wish we knew more. Kind of like, we love you so much, so we must love the people you came from.
Who made you, exactly.
And that is so wonderful. A lot of my work today kind of centers around that issue and that topic and how it's actually really hard for some adoptive parents to extend that kind of grace to their kids' birth families.
Yeah, I think it's more prevalent now. You know, my children are 28, 26, 23, 20, and 10, and all of them adopted. And I think that now the conversation is much more inclusive than it was when you were a kid. How do you think your parents got to such, you know, ahead of their time ideals about adoption? Did they go in wanting open and that just was not an option? Or
I know. I do think they were ahead of their time a bit, because certainly the mantra, you know, 80s when I was adopted, but even before that, was like shame and secrecy and the stigma about birth parents. And my parents' philosophy and their worldview, I think, is really never one of ownership of the kids. Like, I don't think they went in adopting all of us thinking like these are going to be our kids, but there's more of a philosophy of like children are all of ours to steward, kind of. And that's it makes sense for them to adopt through foster care too, where it's really obvious that we had previous beginnings, we had another family. Whereas I think with some folks who adopt, especially like infants through the private adoption system, there's that tendency to just think of them as blank slates, and you can mold them through your nurture, and that nature will like, well, the bad parts of their nature or their genetics will like fade away, which, yeah, they didn't have that belief.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Some adoptees, I think, have a burning desire to define their place in adoption lore. And so in the book, in the first part of the book, is the Adoptee's Manifesto. Can you tell people about
that? Yay, it's just so great. Thank you so much for reading it, by the way.
Oh, listen, I'm very interested in the topic,
I know you
obviously.
Are. Yes, I'm so glad to talk about it. And I'm grateful for your advocacy around LGBTQ parenting. You know, it's so crazy when we weren't allowing gay couples to foster. Like, what in the world? And so, yes, I know that you...
Not only to foster, I had a foster kid I was not allowed to adopt, even though I had raised her.
Ridiculous.
And that was the law in Florida. And, you know, scarily, with all of these anti-gay laws coming out now, is something we have to still fight against. It's really absurd.
Yeah. Well, my manifesto that I start with in the book basically was like a combination of all of these statements that I was telling myself as I was traveling around the country with either the film, the documentary about my search for my birth parents, or just giving a keynote somewhere. And I felt like I always had to ramp myself up and give myself a little pep talk, because in the audience, I knew from previous experiences when I would share the truth about my opinion on adoption, that I think it's really tragic that my birth mother couldn't keep me. And I would talk about this. I would say, you know, my adoptive parents are great, but, and I'm grateful for them, but I'm not grateful to have been adopted. The audience members would often like run up to my parents if they were in the audience and be like,
and say, I'm so sorry she said
yes.
that.
Yes. Are you okay right. with what she said? Or I'm so sorry.
I can't believe she did yeah. that. I can't believe her. Right.
And so
after all you did, you took her from nowhere. She would have had nothing.
She would have been dead if you hadn't gotten her all
yes,
the things.
Exactly.
And so I was compiling all these like pep talk statements for myself. Things like, yes, Angela, you can love more than one set of parents. Yes, Angela, you can wonder about your birth parents and still have gratitude for your adoptive family. Like all of these things that I knew weren't contradictory, but that's the feedback that I felt like I was getting. And so having read kind of these statements to myself for long enough, and then I heard myself sharing them with other adoptees as I was mentoring other adopted people, I'm like, why don't I make it into some sort of cute thing that you can put on the wall? So I had a friend design it, and it's just like a mantra for me. And I'm excited because I've had adoptive parents now buy this manifesto and put it on their wall. One of the statements I wrote says, the pre-verbal memories you have with your first family are real, and then postnatal culture shock exists, which is just a word that I made up, postnatal culture shock, but curiosity about our roots is innate. And I love that it has started creating conversations in adoptive families' homes because they just have it on the wall, that I feel like otherwise they may not have had those conversations. So that feels like a win.
Well, they wouldn't have known that the conversation would be welcome. I do think that I and the rest of the world are sold a lie about adoption. We're sold a Disney version.
Fairy tale version. Yes.
We're told a fairy tale version. And it is just as unfair to all of, it's unfair to all of the in the equation, but the most vulnerable and the one with the least power is the baby, is the infant, who has no choice over what happens. And, you know, but I do think adoption is still necessary in our country.
I agree, at a much lower rate.
Mm.
I think we still need other people to care for kids at times, definitely. I don't know why we need to terminate people's rights in order to do it.
Yeah, I can see that. Although as an adoptive parent, I would say when you are forming and raising your family, you don't want to open yourself up in maybe legal ways, or, you know, like you don't, when you adopt a child, you don't adopt their whole family. And that's a culture thing.
Right.
In other countries, you sort of do,
right.
You know, in other countries, people, the families stay in touch. There's visitation. It's not such a legal, formal thing.
Right.
But, you know, some people, most women, I would say, and tell me if you agree with this, most women who give up babies are in crisis.
I would hope so. I mean, I hope that there's not a single adoption that happens where there isn't a true need. Yeah.
Right.
And that's where sometimes I'm talking in my books about the microfictions where adoptive parents will tell their kids, you know, your birth mom loved you so much, she chose adoption for you. That being really problematic, because for so many adoptees, then you grow up really not understanding like love. What does love mean? Does it mean they give me away? And we need to understand why we are where we are. And so the truth has to be told in some way. And so much of my work right now is finding age-appropriate ways to tell a kid that your biological father murdered someone and so they can't parent you or whatever the truth is, but we just can't avoid it. But yeah, you're right.
We'll be right back with more Angela Tucker.
Presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies to steal a moment for yourself before the week ahead. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
I think the questions come up, you know, the questions came up for my kids. My 7-year-old son said to me right after a ferry accident in New York, where there was a woman who was next to a man who got his leg amputated and she ended up saving his life. And then she disappeared. And I was reading this to him in the car on the way to work one day. And he said, "Mommy, that lady must have been an angel." And I said, "I think you're right, wow, honey. I think she was an angel." And then he said, "Why didn't my birth mother want me?"
Yes.
Oh. Right? Because he was thinking of the angel and the love and the, you know, and I came up with something sort of on the cuff.
I was going to say, were you prepared for that?
I was not prepared, but I said, well, Parker, I could tell you this, that your birth mother was not ready to be a mommy. Mm-hmm. And God looked inside the tummy and saw that there was a mix-up. And she listened to God because she's a good, good person. And God found you, me, because I'm your match. Now, that's what stuck for that day, you know? And I heard him telling his friends a couple of months later that, you know, some mommies aren't ready to be mommies.
Yeah.
And then the mommies who are, they get to be them.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, now, in hindsight, I'm not sure that I hit it out of the park that day.
I think it's especially difficult being like a famous celebrity for you.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
well, just the title of my book, You Should Be Grateful. Like, automatically, I think any adoptive parents, when people hear the word adoptive mom, adoptive dad, they just think these people are like saints.
Saints. Yes, exactly.
They are like.
They do. And people have said to me all the time, "You're so generous." I'm like, they saved me. I didn't save them. Without a doubt, they were each like a life preserver holding me up. You know, I did not do anything gracious. I was the beneficiary of another woman's generosity. But whether the word generosity is applicable there could be argued.
Absolutely.
Right? Was it generosity or was it crisis and a lack of support in our country to women in need and our lack of support with prenatal care and postnatal care?
I'm so glad that you're saying
counseling.
All that. Yeah, I think this is,
yeah.
Sometimes adoptive parents have a hard time admitting that that's the truth, you know, that maybe it's not generosity, but it's the systemic inequities. It's poverty, which I think poverty should never be a reason why someone has to place a kid for adoption. But from an adoptive parent's perspective, it's hard, perhaps, because the child is like the love of your life. You know, I've seen you and Dakota, so sweet. She like loves to give you like practically strangling your neck.
She squeezes me. Exactly.
It's so cute.
Every day she attacks me.
So it can be hard to both love your child like they're yours and kind of belong to you, which I don't like that language, and at the same time understand that the birth parents perhaps could have parented them if we had things set up a little bit different in our society.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's always the case, but I do think that the systemic reality of adoption can't be ignored.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be ignored. And it often is. You know, recently I fell into adoptee TikTok.
I know you have.
Oh, honey, I got beat up pretty bad in there. You know, I went in there, lodio, do, adoption, I'm for adoption, let me go in. And it was like Satan has arrived in our midst. I was totally unprepared for the lashing that I received there. But I think there is, in some ways, an unfair assessment of adoptive parents from adoptees, right? Not of their own. Of us in general as a unit.
I wouldn't say that it's like unfair, but I absolutely agree that many adoptees that finally have a pulpit to speak have lumped adoptive parents all into one. It's not individual, and that all, in the ways that many adoptees were yelling out all the time, one adoptee story does not make everyone's story. Like, we are unique and we want everyone to understand that. I do agree that we haven't lent that same sense to adoptive parents, but I kind of think we're in our terrible twos as an adoptee.
I agree. I kind of said that too. I said, I feel like it's not like you don't, it's like you are not able to handle any
nuance,
criticism or pushback. Mm-hmm. Right. So that it's almost like they were skinless. Their nerves were right there. Right. And I felt like I wanted to hug them, truthfully. Oh. I wanted to go, come
just
here.
Just like you
what
would with a 2-year-old.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. What happened to you? Come here.
Yes.
You're okay. Tell me, you know.
Yes.
But it was an interesting lesson, and it was not a topic that I had stayed away from before. So, of course, I was willing to engage, and then I'd say something else that I thought was right, and they would be, that's wrong, too. And I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm going to tap out, okay? I'm just going to tap out and do a little podcast on my own, and here you are. There's a wonderful part. Here's how I read a book, just so you know. I just fold it right where I have, and I point it to a line.
Okay.
And I loved when you were talking about this girl, Addie, that you mentor.
Yeah.
And what she said, you know, she wrote through her parents' email, and it said, I really want to talk to you because you're kind of like me. You are brown and grew up with white parents, and you were adopted from foster care. I want to know if you can help me find out how much I costed. I've asked my parents, but my parents don't exactly tell me. Do you know how much you costed?
Yes.
Do you think we were the same price?
My mentoring relationship with, her name isn't Addie, but it's Addie in the book.
Okay.
It was just so precious. She has such a huge vocabulary and imagination. And it's so interesting when you kind of get that combination of someone who's adopted has this unnatural beginning to their life, and like their brain works a little bit differently, whether it's because of some trauma in utero or because of neurodivergence or something like that. But I have so many adoptees that I mentor who have this unique quality about themselves, and they're able to have really big conversations like sometimes the adults aren't even ready for. So yeah, the how much did I cost question for her, we ended up talking about, I was teaching her about what a home study is and how adoptive parents have to get one done to make sure that they're safe and will love you and all of these things, and that costs money, you know, and so we were having that conversation, which I think she really loved too, to just understand,
right.
Like for so many adoptees, the question really is, how does this all work?
Right. How did I get to you?
I think I wrote about this in my book, but when I got to meet my foster mom, who similarly to you, loves loving on babies, it was an overwhelming experience meeting my foster mom. I mean, truly, my body felt like what I thought it would feel like meeting my birth mom. I was just like,
interesting.
I know this person. I wanted to be really close to her, like touching her leg when we were out at dinner. I couldn't get close enough. We're very different. Politically, ideologically, our worldviews are really different. Like, we don't agree probably on many things, but my goodness, I want to be near her all the time. I actually credit her for my ability to have a healthy marriage and like attach well to others. My adoptive parents surely had a lot to do with that as well. But I think that time period of 0 to 1, when she just gave the unconditional
love on you.
Right. It wasn't the sense that I hear from some foster parents where it's like, they say, I'm not going to let myself get too attached because it's going to be so hard when I have to give them away. My foster parents like did the opposite. And right. I am so thankful for it.
So it's like she felt like home to you.
She really did. She does. I wish she didn't live across the country. It's
right.
An amazing feeling.
That's wonderful. Speaking of that, of what did you, how was the experience of meeting your birth mother in regards to what you perceived it might be? And maybe this is a good time to talk about Ghost Kingdom and the whole concept of
so
that.
So the Ghost Kingdom, I mean, yeah, my whole life growing up in this closed adoption, I had to fantasize and imagine who my birth parents were and where I came from. So for me, my birth dad was Magic Johnson because he has this humongous smile just like I do, and he plays basketball just like I did. And
right.
I decided that Halle Berry was my birth mother. I don't have any great reasoning other than like, why not?
She's gorgeous and why not?
Sure.
I would have chosen Halle Berry too, frankly.
And so those were my peoples. When I finally found my birth mother and knew I was going to meet her, I wasn't hoping for like Halle Berry. I knew more than that. I knew that my birth mother struggled in so many ways, but I certainly didn't expect her to be really kind of gruff and deny me. She just said, I don't know who you are. You need to leave. I'm not related to you. And
now, wait a second. Let's go back. Did you call her? Did she know you were looking for her? Did you find her on a Adoptee Connect board? How did you find her?
I found my biological father first because he has a really unique name. And I found him through the internet. There was one spot in my adoption paperwork where his first name was not whited out. They accidentally forgot. And so that name, and the name is Otirius, I plugged in with I knew his last name was 4 letters long. And so I had written Otirius, Chattanooga, Tennessee, where I was born. And up came this paper about a guy who was struggling and his name was Otirius Bell. And I was like, same last name.
Come on,
right?
You're like Columbo. Look at you. How did you do
that?
The
only person in Chattanooga, Tennessee with that name. So I found him and then he kind of led us to her. But I also had her address. So with that address, I sent a picture of myself, a letter, and then we showed up. So it wasn't like she had no idea.
No idea, right. But you had not communicated with her before.
I had no way to do it. I wish I did. I wish I could have done it some other way. That's one of the big injustices I feel like from the agency's standpoint, that they could have supported me more and not had to ambush my birth mother. But
correct.
I
so she was unprepared and she was unkind.
Yeah. And so the kindness part in my Ghost Kingdom, you know, I have a pretty peppy disposition. I like smile a lot, running around. I'm always just quite happy in general. And so my parents, I think throughout my whole life, would assume that as much for my birth family too. Like, you must have gotten this from somewhere.
Right.
You wake up
sure.
in the morning and you're just like ready to run around and where did that come from? So it was a surprise when my birth mother had that disposition. Yeah. And
so you had sort of in your ghost kingdom fantasy of what your family of origin was, they were like you.
Yes.
And to find that they were not was probably crushing.
Yes. Although my birth dad and I are so similar. So that was really exciting. It was also surprising because I had really focused most of my energy on my birth mother. And I really don't know why that is. But I had not really thought of my birth dad much at all. And so, yeah, I wanted a mirror. I had never had one.
Yes.
I wanted it so badly.
That's so important. So important.
My parents have one biological daughter, and she has these beautiful blue eyes, just like my dad. And so my whole life, I would listen to everyone else comment on their blue eyes and how they were so alike. And it's so true. And they're beautiful. But I just, hearing that, I would just long for it. Like, somebody tell me that I look like someone else.
Yeah. Exactly. Never looking into a face similar to yours your whole life has got to be some kind of trauma. I mean, you know, it really is. So did you ever make peace with it? Did it ever come around and she said, hey, I needed some time
exactly.
And now we're okay?
Exactly. A year went by where she had to tell everybody that she had done this. She had kept her pregnancy a secret, so no one knew. And I have three other siblings. She has three kids. There's actually four, one we can't find still, but they didn't know. And so she just had to make amends all over the place. So she took a year to do that and then called me and said, yes, I am your birth mother and I want you to come back and I want to meet you and I want to do it right. So we had this big barbecue. It was really cool. And it was just the most beautiful thing, seeing my mom and my birth mom together and each of them telling each other, like my birth mom was saying to my mom, like, thank you so much for raising her. At the same time that my adoptive mom was telling my birth mom, thank you so much for having her. And they were basically just saying, like, thank you for doing what I couldn't do. And I loved that. Feels whole for me. Seeing both of those women in the same place caring for each other is, I still picture that moment. I love it.
And how is your relationship now? Did it change your relationship at all with your parents? Because I was never one of those parents who felt threatened by the children looking for their birth parents.
My parents recently went on a road trip and they went and saw my birth mom and Biloxi, Mississippi, and they texted me a photo of all of them together getting dinner. It was so cute. I loved it. But yeah, we definitely started. We are still in touch. My birth father passed away, so I had 7 years with him, but I am close to the rest of his family, my aunts and uncles, and they love having me as part of the family. It's a really beautiful extended family, but it's marred by the difficulty of me not really knowing my culture and not knowing our family history. That kind of pops up.
You know, it's a definite hard thing. My daughter Chelsea has had a hard time and, you know, she's doing well now, thank God. But, you know, when there's substance in utero, it's a challenge that people lie to you about always. Nobody says, here's what the possibility or here's the probability of what will occur. You know, I don't know.
There's so many unknowns.
So many unknowns.
But I'm wondering, everyone says, like, for you, the people, the adoptive parents who I work with that have the greatest difficulty saying what you've said, like, you know, I'm not intimidated or threatened by my kids' biological parents. Those folks are often people who have struggled with infertility. They're often heterosexual couples and haven't kind of dealt with the sadness that they couldn't have a biological child that they wanted so bad. I feel like gay parents oftentimes don't come in with that same feeling and therefore are a bit more open, you know?
No, and I knew, I mean, you know, all my siblings have kids. So it's a very Irish fertile family. I knew I could have had a baby if I wanted to. I just knew there was a teacher in seventh grade, which was 2 years after my mother died, who took me under her wing and, you know, got me my first training bra and got me tampons when I got my period. And she was a mother, you know, and, and she too died of breast cancer. But when I was much older and I already had had most of my children. And so I knew that love made a family. I didn't think you needed to have the blood. And I also, you know, was terrified of giving birth. I had seen her, that teacher of mine, in labor, and I was watching her other children. And I thought, God almighty, I was 16 years old. No. I thought, I am never pushing a watermelon out of my hoo-ha. I don't care what you say. I'm not doing it. You know, she had like a home birth thing. It was terrifying.
So it is interesting, but that you had a sense of adoption / foster care with your mom dying at a young age that really
yes and we had neighbors take care of us, we had teachers take care of us, you know, my father was at work, my grandmother was couldn't see and couldn't really hear, and she was there, which made it great to come home not to an empty house. But it wasn't like she was a grandmother who could cook, or, you know, you'd walk down the stairs, she'd go, Timmy, doll, who is that, Maureen, Eddie. She'd like name all the kids in the fit because she couldn't see more than 10 feet, you know, but she was there. Nana was always there. And when my mother was gone, you know, it was her mother. She had lived with us my whole life. And that was painful as a little 10-year-old to see the pain on the 70-something-year-old woman's face that was unspoken, because that was the Irish way. You don't talk about the death in the family. You don't talk about what's going on in the house. It's, you got to just... Yeah,
it's such formative therapy, like formative years for you to have that experience. And then and it kind of tracks with the research that I've done, you know, families who or people who want to become adoptive parents who've had nuclear, really kind of stable nuclear family lives their whole life. It is a huge pivot to understand other people can parent other people's kids. And that's fine. Like, that's not, they're not used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Culturally, I think different cultures, people respond in different ways. You know, I don't know if you find, but, you know, I have found in my friends with Latin families or Black families, the cultural communication, so different than Irish Catholic families from the 70s, right? Where there was no Oprah yet. There was no, let's talk about our feelings. There was, you know, nobody was saying, oh, there's the mother's gone. And when you talk about prenatal, what did you name it again? Prenatal culture shock.
Postnatal culture shock. Just like
postnatal culture shock. You're right.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I totally get that. I totally understand. You know, when Parker, I read everything I could read when I was adopting Parker, and they said how the baby really knows the birth mother's scent and heartbeat and but mostly the smell. And they recommended that when you get a baby newborn, that you make sure you do skin to skin and that you don't shower for yourself, because they will get your smell for like 7 days. And I did the whole thing. I think, you know, I was like smelly, and I thought, this is going to imprint him. He's going to imprint to me, you know, but I did anything that I read that could try to negate the primal wound of adoption. But of course, there's that famous book, and it is a primal wound. And I think that it's unfair or ignorant of adoptive parents to not know that.
And it's really unrealistic and almost kind of hurtful to try to just like sweep over it or pretend like it can be fixed. I think part of what I love working with adoptees, mentoring adoptees, is there's not that sense that I think we feel with adoptive parents sometimes, which is like that they want to fix us or fix the parts that we got from our birth parents that are negative. And instead, it's like we talk to each other and kind of just understand that some things just are, you know, that you can't go back and change the things that our birth parents did when we were inside of them. And that's sad. And that's period. End of story. There's not a fix to it. I think that's why I'm building this mentoring society, because therapy is so helpful for so many adoptees, of course. But I found that there was this need for something in between, not a friendship, but not a therapist, because there were certain things that we don't try to fix. They just are.
Right.
And the people that are best at sitting with it, I feel like, are other adoptees who get it.
Yes, I agree. It's interesting, although it's totally not the same, and I'm not saying it is. So please, adoptee TikTok, don't attack me. But, you know, I see it through the need of my youngest child who has autism. She wants to be around other autistic kids
yes.
all the time. And I said, do you know why you want to? She goes, Mom, it's my culture.
Oh, she could say that?
And I was like, she said that at 10 years old. It's my culture. And then when I took her to one of these VidCons where all the kids who watch the same video games, you know, it's like an animated show with objects. And I'm like, okay, you know, they say get into their world as much as you can.
Yeah.
So off we went to this.
Great.
And she's sitting there with so many kids, so much like her. And she looked at me and she said, this is it.
Oh,
found it.
Just the like feeling at peace, feeling at home. This happens in, I don't know if you know this, but there are these things called transracial adoption camps that happen all over
yes, I do
the
know.
Country.
Yes.
Okay. This phenomenon is so clearly seen there, where there are these
I can imagine.
Black and brown kids all over the place, and one of them will yell to their mom, and a white person will respond like, what do you need? And nobody flinches or goes up to the kid and is like, wait, that's your mom? Wait, what in the world?
Yeah, exactly.
They just, and so there's this freedom where they can just play soccer or do the ropes course and yell for their mom and not have to worry about that moment where people are like, huh, how does that work?
Yeah, exactly.
So beautiful.
Exactly. And everyone finding acceptance in their story
yes.
and others like them. I mean, the internet has been wonderful and terrible in that way, but
yes.
the wonderful way is to connect people who want that sense of community and who find it in the similarity of their lives to
yes.
others. So what you're doing is very important, Angela Tucker.
Thank you.
And I'm thankful that you are here and the book that everybody can go out and buy is You Should Be Grateful, Stories of Race, Identity, and Transracial Adoption. Angela Tucker, you were delightful.
Thank you, Rosie. This is so fun.
We'll be back with questions from you, the loyal listeners.
Presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies to steal a moment for yourself before the week ahead. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Well, thanks for sticking around. I hope that you found our conversation fascinating and enlightening. I sure did. Now it's question time. Hit it.
Hey, Rosie, this is Gerard. And I'm calling you. I'm leaving you a message from Paris, the one in France. And I just wanted to tell you that I'm so happy that you're back interviewing, and it's so refreshing to hear your sense of humor and your outlook on life again since I've been watching you forever. I'm also from Long Island, New York, so it's also nice and comforting to hear your accent, which I'm sure you don't hear a lot, but it is wonderful to hear being so far away from my friends and family, but I do love it here in France. However, I do experience a lot of misunderstanding as I'm learning the language. I don't speak French, so I'm currently trying to, but I often am misunderstood incredibly. And I wanted to know what situations you've ever been in where you've been completely misunderstood, and how you dealt with it, and were you ever really sort of understood from that experience. So, but thank you so much. I appreciate hearing you and all the wonderful conversations you've been having. Thanks again. Bye. Or au revoir.
Au revoir, Gerard. Very nice message. Thank you, sweetheart. Well, how did you end up in Paris? How did you end up there? What do you do in Paris? Is one able to live in Paris and work, or do you have dual citizenship or something? I have a lot of questions for you. I really do. But what can I say? Not understood. I remember this from a long time ago when Patti LuPone opened in London, Sunset Boulevard. I went over to see her, and afterwards, a bunch of New Yorkers and Patti, and I think Scott Whitman and Mark Shaiman and a bunch of us, Walter Bobby, we were walking through the theater district to go to the Jo Allen's that I think was open then, or I don't know if it's still open now in London, but we were all talking, saying how great we thought she was, and there was a man in front of us, and he goes, "Will you stop speaking? Your accent is terrible. I can't believe it. You're making my ears bleed." And I was like, "I'm really sorry. That's just the way I talk." And he's like, "Well, don't. It's horrible." So I don't know if that's about understanding me or just he was horrified by my New York accent that you love so much. So, you know, different strokes for different folks, Gerard. But whenever I am in a place where someone doesn't speak the language, I'm one of those annoying people that overdo trying to communicate. Or like I know very minimal amount of sign language. And if someone's deaf there, of course, I got to show them my 10 words I know. It's a very annoying part of me. You know, there's a whole like list of things that are really annoying that I do that after I do them again, I go, "God, that was annoying. You shouldn't do that." But doesn't seem to help, Gerard. Doesn't seem to help. Thank you for your lovely message. I really do appreciate it. And we got time for one more.
Dude, I think the universe hands you gifts when you need them the most. And your podcast was a gift to me. I'm going through a hard time selling a house and moving back to Alabama to take care of my family. And you have gotten me through some stressful days. I did want to tell you, you were talking about Dakota and how you were having a hard time remembering to say they and them. And it made me feel so much better. I try to understand those issues. I hate to call them issues. They're not issues, but you know what I mean. I try to understand and be cognizant, but there's so much now. There's so much that we have to be careful with. And it was refreshing to hear that sometimes even you get it wrong. That probably sounds weird, but I just want you to know it made me feel better. So thank you for that. And my question is, what the heck? You turned 50 and got a new baby? When I turned 50, I got a tattoo and like turned hedonist for 10 years. Well, that was when I turned 40. But anyway, I was just curious. What made you decide at 50 years old to adopt a new baby? Now, I'm all about the babies. I love them too, but I'm kind of glad mine are grown now.
Thanks, dude. I didn't get your name because you called me dude, so I'll call you dude right back. Yeah, you know, I do struggle with the pronouns, and my kid said, why don't you get they tattooed on your wrist? And I did. And they said recently, I guess that tattoo didn't work, you know, because I still mess up. But I'm trying very hard and I know it's very important to them. And, you know, I'm riding that wave with them on the same board, getting us safely to the shore, you know? And why did I adopt again at 50? You know, kids are the best things in my life and world. All of them, all five of them. And I can't imagine what my life would have been like without them. And Dakota came to me in a special way, and there we were together, and it felt like the right thing. And it's been the best blessing, the best gift in my life, because it's changed the way I see the world. And being able to stretch that muscle of the way we see things, being able to reframe and to understand their brain is different. The way the brain functions is different. Their experience in the world is different. And their autism, although often a challenge, has been a gift. So thank you for your kind words, and hope that you're okay moving back to take care of your family. That's a beautiful thing. It's hard. You know, we enter the world and they take care of us, and they exit and we take care of them. And that's the journey of life, right? Hey, listen, send us your questions, comments, and voice memo to onwardrosie@gmail.com. I feel bad that some of the longer ones we can't get in because they're too lengthy. So try to keep it as short as you can so that I can answer you. If they're a long question, you know, a long buildup, it's hard to edit. So next week, my buddy, my friend, playwright extraordinaire, screenwriter, actor, and drag legend, Charles Bush. His new memoir, Leading Lady, is a tell-all. He even tells all about our time together working on Taboo on Broadway with Boy George. And boy, that's a juicy chapter. Until next week, thank you all for listening. This is Onward with Rosie O'Donnell.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Looking for a fabulous fashion brand that celebrates you? Then look no further than Boston Proper, where styles are designed with you in mind, so you can look and feel amazing, no matter the day, season, or occasion. At bostonproper.com, you'll find fashion that knows you best. For over 30 years, Boston Proper has been the fashion destination for confident women who want to elevate their look with unique, sophisticated clothing at affordable prices. Visit bostonproper.com today. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.